Hello and welcome to another amazing episode of Video Nasties. My name is Max Cherry. Thank you for listening. It is a beautiful, rainy Saturday morning here on Cape Cod, Massachusetts. It's 8:04 a.m. It is September 12th. I'm sipping on some delicious coffee. Excuse me while I take another sip. I'm sitting out on the porch. My adorable cat is chilling by the glass door, looking at me through the glass, staring at me. I'm just trying to set a scene for you. So the movie I watched last night was Oz the Great and Powerful, which is the movie that Sam Raimi made previous to Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, which I greatly preferred. I thought it was much better. Doctor Strange was much better than Oz, but I liked Oz, and I do see it as kind of like an underappreciated movie. I think you have to understand what the movie is to appreciate it. You have to understand the context. This is, first of all, it's a Wizard of Oz movie, which I think is dope, and I think there should be more of. Especially if they're like this. The movie really is beautiful. Some of the effects are cool, like genuinely cool. It's definitely over CGI'd. It definitely exists at that post-Avatar point in time when everything was 3D, everything was over CGI'd or over computerized. They were using digital effects where they could have and should have used practical. As I've said in a previous episode, practical is coming back in a big bad way, so look out. VHS is coming back, and I greatly support all of this, and Video Nasties greatly supports all of this. But at that time, that wasn't happening. So, Oz the Great and Powerful, first of all, it's a kid's movie, so you have to understand that. And also, it's comedic, and a lot of the comedy is broad, and it is meant to make kids laugh, and it's meant to be sort of old-fashioned. The movie's rated PG. This is kind of like a great kid's movie, though. Like, if I saw this as a kid, I probably would have, I don't know what I would have thought, but I probably would have thought it was cool. And it is a movie I would show to my kids, if I ever had them, which I won't, because I'm never having kids. Or getting married. That second one might change. The first one might too, but that's the plan. So, Oz the Great and Powerful. So, James Franco stars as the man himself, Oz. I mean, I guess that's his name, Oz. I don't really know how that works. He's hard to take seriously as an actor, I'll be honest. Especially now, post Me Too. He's one of the people who got hit hardest by Me Too. His career is over. It's dead. It's killed. I haven't done a lot of Me Too research, mostly because I don't really give a shit, but in terms of James Franco, I don't know exactly what he did or what he's accused of. I don't think it's as bad as some of the other things that some of the other people are accused of, namely Harvey Weinstein and Bill Cosby, the people like that, who are accused of actual rape. People like Louis C.K., I mean, I know Louis C.K. is accused of jerking off in front of girls or something, and James Franco, I don't even know what he's accused of, threatening texts or something, I don't know, but anyway, his career is over, and I don't think it's any great loss. I never thought that he was that talented. I think, I don't know, girls thought he was cute, and he was a hard worker. I mean, I think he always kind of had a lot going on. I know he was at Yale for a minute, which is cool. New Haven represent, that's where I'm from. But I don't see him as a particularly talented actor. To the point that it's actually hard to take him seriously as an actor, because he's not like a real actor. I mean, I think he is charming in this movie. I guess he's kind of funny sometimes. I think it kind of works. He's kind of like a huckster magician type. But it's just, you know, like I said, it's just hard to take his performance seriously, especially now, post Me Too. However, the cast is pretty good. Rachel Weisz showed up at one point. I'm always happy to see her. Mila Kunis, always very happy to see her. Who else is in it? Oh, yeah, so Zach Braff is in it. I think this was at a time in his career when he was still kind of like trying to be a serious actor or a real actor. Not that it's like a serious performance, it's actually more of a comedic performance, but this is a big movie, this is a big Hollywood movie, so I think he was still like trying to do that. And I don't know, I think partially because of this movie it didn't happen. I think this movie ended up kind of failing somewhat at the box office. I think the budget was pretty big, and I don't know, I think people just weren't really interested. I can't totally blame them. Like I said, I think Wizard of Oz movies are cool, but a Wizard of Oz movie with James Franco, I don't know, people didn't care, people don't even know who Sam Raimi is, I don't know what happened, but, the movie is definitely worth a watch. It's available on Stars. Check it out if you haven't seen it. So, I always kind of like Zach Braff because I like Scrubs. He can be kind of annoying. He does some voice acting in this. I mean, I think he's pretty good in it. He is a little annoying at times. And he kind of disappeared. Zach Braff is like a weird case. Like, where did he go? What happened to him? Did he retire from acting? I don't know what happened. And he also he wrote and directed Garden State, which was like this Sundance hit. And then he never directed another movie until Wish You Were Here or something. I don't know what it was called, which I think he made around the time of this movie, actually. I want to say it was like 2013 era. But then he never made another one, and nobody really saw that one. I think it played Sundance, actually, and people didn't really give a shit. I don't know. I'm not a Zach Braff expert by any means. Sorry, I'm taking another sip of coffee. So, this movie starts out in black and white in a boxy aspect ratio, and I think it's meant to kind of mimic like a 40s movie. It kind of reminded me of Nightmare Alley, actually, in that way. Not that Nightmare Alley is shot that way, but just that kind of like 40s vibe. Starts out at this kind of like traveling carnival or traveling circus. No, I think it's a carnival. And that's where Oz is a magician and Zach Braff is his assistant. So I thought it was cool. I liked that whole opening. I thought it was cool that it was shot in black and white, kind of like sepia toned black and white. So it kind of gave the feel of that era. And it also kind of looked like the original Wizard of Oz, and then it transitions to color like the original Wizard of Oz. As I was watching it, I was thinking, oh, okay, so they're actually paying tribute to the original. Not that this is a remake or anything, but that classic, you know, Wizard of Oz 1939, they're paying tribute to that, and they're going to switch to color. I realized that as I was watching it. I thought that was cool. And then when the switch to color does happen, it is, again, overly CGI'd, but I thought the environments were beautifully rendered at times, not all of it. And then, like, I liked the giant flowers and the little creatures were cool. That little doll thing, I thought had a cute voice. I wasn't sure if that was Michelle Williams. It sounded too young to be her. And then Michelle Williams popped up, and so it wasn't her. So anyway, Michelle Williams is in this movie, too. And then the other thing I wanted to mention. Okay, so it says it's based on the works of L. Frank Baum. Is that what his name is? In other words, the guy who wrote The Wizard of Oz. So it's based on his works. So I think, I don't know if he wrote like a series of Oz books or what. I don't know if this is actually closer to the source material than the original Wizard of Oz. I don't know if there was a character named Oz. But he, the character of Oz, played by James Franco, goes through a twister, a tornado, and ends up in Oz. Much like what happens to Dorothy in the original. Her house gets taken up by the twister. She ends up in Oz. So I don't know how close it is to the books. I don't know if it's closer or less close. I kind of got the feeling like maybe this is actually closer to the source material. Like maybe this was actually like the original story. I don't know. I'm just like totally speculating. But I was thinking, oh, maybe that's how it started. This dude named Oz ends up in Oz, and then they changed it to Dorothy in the original. I mean, I don't know. The fact that they would change it, well, no, that's not true. I was going to say in 1939 they wouldn't change it to a woman, but that's not true. I mean, they were making women's pictures back then, and things have gotten distorted now where everybody thinks the past was sexist, misogynistic, and now we're in a more enlightened place, which in some ways we are. I'm not going to get into politics right now, though, so skip that. And then the last thing I wanted to mention was the Sam Raimi-ness of it all. You can kind of feel his influence, or not his influence, you can feel his hand as the director. He's always able to kind of, like, take these big movies and kind of, like, put his stamp on them, put his signature on them. There were some kind of, like, some cool Sam Raimi shots. There was, like, some slightly creepy stuff. It's just, it's cool how he's able to do that. I never really liked the Spider-Man movies. I would probably appreciate them more if I watched them now. Oh, James Franco was in those too. I guess maybe that's where their relationship started. So he was able to do this also in Doctor Strange, but Doctor Strange was just kind of cooler, like slightly more adult, slightly weirder. I don't know, maybe you can get away with stuff in a Marvel movie because Marvel is just kind of like its own closed universe, it's its own thing, and like Kevin Feige is like the god of that universe, and if he approves it, it's fine. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if it's more restrictive, less restrictive. I'm sure it's kind of both. Like in some ways it's more restrictive than a movie like this, but in other ways it's actually less restrictive. They have a ton of money, but it's like, it's its own thing, you know, Marvel's its own thing. So maybe you can get away with more in some ways. I mean, look, Edgar Wright walked away from Ant-Man. I'm sure they were putting pressure on him, giving him shit. He wasn't able to make the movie he wanted to make, but maybe as long as you make the movie that they want to make, then you can do some kind of weird things in it. Again, speculating. I'm not sure. So, the other movie I watched last night was The Invisible Man, which I didn't get very far into. I maybe watched the first 15 minutes. It's available on Freevee, I think is what it's called. I think it's like this new channel. They do have free movies on there, but they have ads. So anytime you see ad one of one at the beginning of a movie, you're going to get more ads, I think. That's what happened to me. It just said ad one of one. I punched in The Invisible Man. This is the Lee Winnell, Elizabeth Moss Invisible Man. So I punched that in, wanted to watch it. It was slightly more pricey to rent than I wanted, although still pretty cheap to rent. And then I saw it on Freevee, so I said, oh yeah, I've been seeing ads for this thing Freevee, so I'm going to try it. And I tried it. The ad one of one at the head of the movie was just a Freevee ad. An ad for the channel itself, just quickly, just saying Freevee, and then the movie started. And I was like, oh shit, maybe that's it. Maybe this is actually legitimately free movies. And then I watch, I don't know, I'll say 10 to 15 minutes, maybe 12 minutes of the movie, and an ad pops up, so I turned it off. But those first 15 minutes are pretty dope. They're pretty killer, particularly the opening scene. And Elizabeth Moss is really good in this. I don't actually like her. She bothers me, but she's really good in this. It's the best performance I've seen her give. It's Lee Whannell's best work as a director. And here's what I realized while I was watching it. This is what I really want to talk about. Lee Whannell is an example of a writer-turned-director who I actually think is a better director than he is a writer. So, he got his start as a writer. The Saw movies, Sinister, what have you. I don't know if he actually wrote Sinister. He wrote one of those fucking series or something. I don't know. But he got his start with James Wan. Writing. Then, with Upgrade, and this is only in the last few years, 2018, I think that movie came out, he turned to directing. Upgrade is dope. Upgrade is one of my favorite sci-fi movies of the past few years. It's sci-fi with a little bit of horror mixed in. And what I liked about Invisible Man is that it's the reverse. It's horror with a little bit of sci-fi mixed in. So he directs Upgrade, and he's a dope director. He's actually even better at that than he is at writing. I'm like, how does this happen? And then The Invisible Man is even better, and it's even better directed. It's beautifully shot, beautifully directed. I love the framing. I love the way it looks. I love the way it feels. And what I love about the way it feels is that it's cold, it's numb, it makes me feel cold, it makes me feel numb. That's what I want to feel. Especially with this kind of movie. I like it. I love the way he shoots, or the way his cinematographer shoots. The way everything is framed. It's very precise. It's very clinical. Right from the opening shot, I was like, this is dope. And everything just looks, everything just has this kind of like cold, pristine look to it. It just looks great. Shot digitally, I assume, but that actually works for the movie in a way. I love it. And what it made me think of is Alex Garland. Oh, by the way, one of the reasons why I love it is that I'm a writer myself, a writer who wants to direct, so it gives me hope. Anyway, it reminds me of Alex Garland, who, you know, I appreciated as a writer. I liked Sunshine before the third act. I kind of loved 28 Days Later, although I didn't really love it until, I don't know, kind of like later on. I kind of like rewatched and I was like, oh, okay, this is like a dope movie, dope zombie movie. Probably one of the best, well, no, definitely one of the best zombie movies of its era. And then, in 2014, he makes Ex Machina. He turns to directing. And he's even better as a director than he is as a writer. Same thing happened with Lee Whannell. And it's even the shooting is kind of similar. Precise framing. A kind of cold, clinical tone. And it fits with the material. And he even made a sci-fi movie, as was the case with Lee Whannell making Upgrade. Now, the difference is Lee Whannell kind of cut his teeth with horror movies, whereas Alex Garland was already kind of a sci-fi guy, especially with Sunshine. But he's also a horror guy, because 28 Days Later and then The Beach, I think, is like a horror movie. Never actually seen The Beach. I saw like the beginning of it at one point. Anyway, but genre, they're genre guys. For the most part, not totally. I think Never Let Me Go, I think Alex Garland wrote. But that was based on a novel. He's also a novelist himself. Anyway, Ex Machina, dope. Then he directs Annihilation, even doper. I loved it even more. I can see why some people appreciated Ex Machina more. I loved Annihilation even more. I love Annihilation. I love that movie so much. One of my favorite movies of the decade. Based on a novel by Jeff Vandermeer, which I do want to read. Part of a trilogy of novels. So he writes and directs Ex Machina, and then he writes and directs Annihilation, and it's very different. The style is very different, but just so well directed. Great directing, and then Devs, which I'm still finishing, but which I like a lot. And now Men is his most recent movie, which I still have to see. You know, I'm gonna write that down actually. Men, I need to watch that if I can get my hands on it, so to speak. Okay, so. Yeah, and in the same way, or well, I guess I don't know. Not in the same way, but it's also the case for Lee Whannell that his second movie is very different from his first movie. So The Invisible Man is very different from Upgrade. Although it's kind of the reverse. At least so far in The Invisible Man. The Invisible Man is kind of like cleaner, cooler. And then Ex Machina is kind of cleaner, cooler. And then Annihilation is kind of warmer and dirtier. And then Upgrade is kind of warmer and dirtier. I'm talking about it, you know, from a stylistic perspective. But again, it's a jump, it's something different. But all four of these movies are so well directed. And Devs is well directed too. And I haven't seen Men, so I can't comment on it. I don't know what Lee Whannell's doing next. I don't know what he has cooking, but I'll watch anything the man directs. He's great. I'm not gonna say he's a great director because I can't say that yet. With Alex Garland, though, he may be a great director. I prefer Alex Garland to Lee Whannell. I think he's more talented, but I think they're both talented. I think Lee Whannell is extremely talented. I love Upgrade. I love The Invisible Man so far. But if I had to pick between Upgrade and The Invisible Man and Ex Machina and Annihilation, I would pick Ex Machina and Annihilation. Thank you for listening. I'm Maxwell Haddad. Talk to you soon. Peace. Okay, there's something I forgot to mention. So this is The Invisible Man is technically a universal monster. So this technically falls in line with something like the Wolfman, and it falls in line with what I was talking about on that episode. Well, I know it wasn't the Wolfman episode, it was Hatching. It was the Hatching episode, but with the Wolfman and then with the Invisible Man, these are an updating of the Universal Monsters. These are a recontextualization. These are a kind of the more kind of like dark and gritty versions of those stories, and of those movies, even though they're completely different, they're kind of like the new version of those stories. So the examples that I like to use are Bram Stoker's Dracula by Francis Ford Coppola, 1992, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein with Robert De Niro, 1996, 98, I don't know what year that movie came out. Could have even been 94, could have been later, I don't know, somewhere in that kind of late 90s region. And then I was talking about The Mummy with Tom Cruise. You can also look at the Stephen Sommers Mummy movies, which I liked. I used to love those when I was a kid, but or when I was younger. But just as a single individual movie, The Mummy with Tom Cruise, also because I just like want to see that movie, so I keep talking about it, reminding myself about it. And then you have the Wolfman, and then you have the Invisible Man now. Now, the Invisible Man is the best of all of these movies, besides Bram Stoker's Frankenstein, which is I mean, Bram Stoker's Dracula, which is just one of my favorite movies of all time. And Dracula is also my favorite Universal monster. I love vampires, and I particularly love Dracula. So, yeah, The Invisible Man is just a great, great updating of the mythology and of the character of the Invisible Man. I haven't even gotten to the Invisible Man stuff. So far, it's just been Elizabeth Moss escaping from this fucking crazy dude. He apparently dies of suicide. She's inheriting $5 million from him. Boom, cut to commercial. That's all I saw. But this is better than The Wolfman. I assume better than The Mummy with Tom Cruise. I haven't watched it yet. Better than the Mummy movies with Brendan Fraser, even though I used to love those movies, and I still enjoy them. The first one, I'm sure, is, like, easily the best. But I've seen The Mummy Returns, I've seen The Scorpion King, I've seen, The Dragon, Dragon Emperor 1 or whatever, the newer one they did. I've seen them all. And those could all, those are all part of this conversation, or can be, as far as I'm concerned. Better than Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, maybe. I haven't seen it, with Robert De Niro. Not better than Bram Stoker's Dracula with Gary Oldman, directed by Francis Ford Coppola. Just one of the dopest movies ever made, as far as I'm concerned. But, yeah, this is the one, in terms of the last 20 years, as far as an updating of a universal monster... an updating of a universal monster mythology, a new version of that character, that story, that movie. This is the one to watch, The Invisible Man.